This is a Pinball News production.
Okay, so what's really important here in what I'm trying to discuss is that, first of all, there's obviously a global resurgence. There's a lot of people playing pinball. There's not, to a certain extent, that's not terribly special, what's going on in New York. What I want to discuss is the actual individual players that have made it happen. And, you know, I think that the New York story is not unique in so much that, you know, similar things are going on around the world. However, you know, we do have some unique characters involved and some unique stories, and I want to share that. So, you know, first of all, let's just talk about the scene prior to 2007. In my research and putting this together, I came to realize that, like, 2007 was a magical year, and things just started to happen then. However, the, you know, let's just take a look at what things were like prior to that. So prior to that, there's nothing going on in New York City. There's damn near nothing, no pinball anywhere. The Broadway Arcade closed in the late 90s. My friend Sam was telling me that, you know, he moved here in the late 90s and immediately, you know, was super excited. He came from Minnesota and he thought to himself, wow, this is going to be amazing. This is New York City. I'm going to find pinball everywhere. And he goes on to RGP and he tries to figure out what's going on, and there's nothing. There's a pinball crawl that gets set up, and there's, I think, three places they go. And one of them happens to be Broadway Arcade and then a bar in the East Village, and that's about it. So there's not a whole lot going on. And come 2000, these bar crawls stop because there's nothing to support it. And while there's a handful of machines out there on location, they're not well maintained, they're not well played, they're not earning any money, and, you know, they're basically just taking up valuable New York real estate and, you know, doing little more than that. So come 2007, things start to change a little bit, and there, you know, the first character I'm going to focus on here is a gentleman named Max Pinball. That's not his real name, obviously, but Max comes around, and he's a home collector, and he basically starts to realize that he can't fit any more machines in his home, and he wants to put stuff on location. But he does more than that. He takes over an online pinball locator in New York City, takes over that, smartly, because he wants to promote his machines, he wants to get his stuff out there, and he, you know, starts to think about, you know, how else to get his, you know, now operator business going, which is a side business. And the important thing is that he is a hobbyist, he's a, you know, he's a homeowner, and in late 2007, he goes to Papa, and he plays in the C division, and he ends up playing Spider-Man in the finals. And he owns Spider-Man, and he's quite good at Spider-Man, but he completely craps out. In finals, he gets like 2 million points or something terrible, because he's nervous. He's never competed before. And so so essentially, that spawns the idea, like, I want to get better at competition, and I want to, you know, make this happen. So here we're drawing on, you know, the efforts outside of the city and these bigger efforts, you know, which is the, you know, the Papa competitions. And so he comes back to New York. He says, all right, I'm going to start a pinball league. And, you know, so that, for the mere reason of, like, you know, getting better at competitive pinball, but at the same time also promoting his business. Now he's got this business going on. So we'll come back to that. But enter this guy, John. Now, John lives in the East Village. I don't know if you guys know New York City, but lives in the East Village, and there's this one bar in the East Village called Vasex Horseshoe Bar, or also known as 7B, because it's on the intersection of East 7th Street and Avenue B. So 7B has a couple of pinball machines in the back, and a few other, you know, like Buck Hunter and a few other arcade games, and it's its old kind of just dive bar. And John lives down the block. So John goes, he'd been playing pinball as a youth, and, you know, there's not a whole lot going on there, but there's a Spider-Man at 7B, and he starts to play it religiously and ridiculously. He's constantly playing the game there, and he's hanging out. And soon he meets Sean Grant, who many of you may know is in competitive world, and the two of them start going around and playing in other places as well, what few places there are. And then John just says, decides at the end of 2007, I want a pinball machine. I want to own this pinball machine. So he talks to the operator, overpays for a new inbox, Stern pinball machine, Spider-Man, and brings it into his apartment. And that basically starts this, he just becomes a crazy collector after that. And things start to go from there. So now he owns a pinball machine, and we move forward to the next year. So this is the groundwork. This, Max has a few locations out there. He craps out at Papa. He wants to do something more with competitive pinball. John buys his first machine. He gets, he gets his juices flowing. He starts to collect. So in January of 2008, Max starts the New York City Pinball League. Not to be confused with the Pinball New York City League. And I apologize for that. But the New York City Pinball League is a singles league, and it takes place completely at one location, Amsterdam Billiards, where there are three of Max's machines. I think there's a Cyclone and a Star Trek Bally. I forget what the other game was. In any case, he just posted on RGP, and he gets 12 people show up. One of those people happens to be John, whom we just met, and a guy named Bob. Now, Bob, plays a role shortly. And then that year, they end up with three seasons, and it continues to grow. So they go from one single night of pinball on Monday nights and, the 12 people to ultimately they end up like three nights and three different, skill levels maybe they maxed out at like 30 people total, and it's basically like a one-on-one league, and they play around with the formats a lot, but it draws a lot of people out. It draws, I believe, Coy, you played in it, right? Yeah, Coy played in it. Steve Bowden's playing in it. Sean Grant is playing in it. John is playing in it. And the significance there is that these people are coming out of the woodwork because now there's something good going on in the city, and now they're the machines are well-tended because Max is there in the league as well, and if there's a ball problem, he goes and he fixes it. And this is what, the hardcore competitors insist on, so that's what Max offered up, and he gave it to them. Similarly, my friend Sam, he's like, well, hell yeah, I'm going to play in that league because these guys are legends. I get to play Sean Grant. I get to play Steve Bowden. That's amazing. And so he shows up, and they religiously go. And Bob here, this is Bob. Not the greatest photo of Bob, but we do the best with what we have. Now, Bob takes over the pinball league, running the pinball league, and he's religious about it. And this is critical because he's there three nights a week. He's tallying everybody's scores. He's sending the results to the IFPA, and he's getting ranking points for everybody. And people want that. This level of dedication. He's making sure the machines are fine. Max steps away, he gets married, he has his wife gets pregnant, he's no longer necessarily actively participating, but meanwhile he's growing his route a little bit, and new places pop up along the way. Okay. And Bob also helps Max with moving machines and servicing them and picking them up in various locations around the city, around the state. Okay, then enter this man over here, Al Siak. Now, Al's story, and hopefully he'll correct me but I think I pretty much got it right. Somewhere around 2007, he starts to, troll and try to look for pinball machines, and he's not terribly happy with what he's seeing. There's not a whole lot of good stuff going on there. Things are just getting started. And then he ultimately, ends up, coming upon a route at in Williamsburg, and this one location. Yeah, Al, you've got a mic. You want to just tell the story?
Three or four locations. I was looking at Max's locator and looking for pinball machines to play, and there were less than 70 in the entire New York City greater area, which was kind of sad. And I would go. I found a few really nice bars in Williamsburg, a cool beer bar, a very nice hipster. Nice music bar, and a few places that had pinball machines, and I'd go from Manhattan, I'd drive out there at night, so I wasn't working at the time, And you'd go in, the left flipper wouldn't work, and it would take months for the operator to fix that left flipper. And but I'd still go play every once in a while, and the machines just went down and down and down. So I said, heck, I need my own machine, because I know the only way I'll be able to play a good working machine is to buy one. So I bought a Simpsons Pinball Party new in the box, December of 05. While I was waiting, the next day, I go to a thrift store, and I'm sharing my exciting news that I'm getting a pinball machine. They're like, really? We got an old one in the back, but I think it needs legs. So the next day, it was a Monday, I'll never forget, and I go, well, what are they going to do with the machine? And they're like, well, come back Friday, because they're not sure if they're going to put it on the internet or whether they're going to sell it. And so I drove Tuesday. I'm not going to wait till Friday. And it's a different manager. I go to the same salesman, and he's like, hey, Myron, who is the manager. He goes, what do we do with the pinball machine? And Myron's like, well, maybe we should sell it before anything happens to it. And so they go, well, how would you pick it up? I go, well, I've got a Mini Cooper. I go, let me drive my Mini Cooper around, and I'll measure the back. As I'm driving around, they're carrying the thing out, off the legs, but not folded down. And I see, wow, really nice condition, top card pinball machine. Gottlieb wedge head, stand-up targets, four kickers, a slingshot kickers kind of. And I fold down the back seat, and they slide it in, and I couldn't fold the top down, but I'm going three blocks. So I drove the three blocks, and my super brought the machine upstairs. I called Crazy Levy, because I knew there was a guy. I saw a Gottlieb road race, I think it was, at a falafel shop downtown, and there was a business card. So I rode down there, got the business card. The guy came over and cracked open the door. It was a fuse. Put in the new fuse. I had one working game. Wound up with the Simpsons, and then my college sweetheart, who lives in Montana, saw a local ad in the newspaper. Two pinball machines, $200 each, Comet and Checkpoint. So I had those delivered, and I go to a NASCAR event because now I've got a relationship with the UPS driver because I'm waiting for parts all the time. You know, maybe I bought a few other games at some auctions or something, like estate sales. And I went to a NASCAR event. Not that I'm a NASCAR guy, but I committed. And there's a local they're handing out the local Sunday newspaper. I see an ad in the classifieds, pinball machine, $1,000. It was a Twilight Zone, a Fishtails, a Funhouse, and a Mario Andretti. I bargained them down to $4,800 for the four. I went the next day and picked them up, you know, on a Tuesday. And so now I'm starting to mass pinball machines, and one of the owners of one of those original three bars knows I have a Funhouse now, and he loves Funhouse. So he goes, look, you bring your Funhouse, and I'll tell this operator to take the game out, because I forgot what it was, but it was, whatever game it was, you know, it just wasn't working very well. And so the operator didn't like that idea of being replaced. So he came back with a list with 10 machines on it, and I saw Roadshow. I go, well, you like Funhouse? I go, that's its older brother. I go, maybe Carlene Carter's a little annoying, but it's a good game. So he brings Roadshow, and the derrick, or the plow in front of Ted's mouth, would never go up. One of the optos had failed. And so you'd spend your 75, drive out to Brooklyn, spend 75 cents, advance till we can start multi-ball, and it says, shoot Ted's mouth, and the thing's in the way. And so you're like yelling at the machine, I can't shoot Ted's mouth, maybe you need a jump ramp. So another year goes by, and the operator wants me to call him. I'm thinking, well, I'm not going to go fix the guy's pinball machines, because I had started, you know, learning how to fix that. Someone's guidance, an electronics genius freak that I knew. And but he wanted to know if I wanted to buy his machines. I bought 14 pinball machines for $11,500, including
and
some nice games.
And
well,
the round.
No, and, well, and then went into all those places and said, hey, look, this guy was a clown. You know, I'd like to take it seriously. And they were all, you know, very happy. You know, very fine with that idea. It was a Friday. I gave the guy the money, and there was one of the bars, the beer hall had I forgot what game it was, but it had the left flipper never worked, and it had a cloudy, a gassed out dot matrix display. Sorry, but I figured if it was a Friday, I don't have a chance to bring another game until next week. But if I fix that flipper, maybe a couple people will play it. You know, so I lift up the playfield, and there's a wire dangling right next to the coil. I solder back on, the flipper works. I'm like, well, the other operator couldn't do that in 3 months, you know, not once check on the game. And he's bitching his $40 in the coin box, you know. And so I just, from then on, I took it seriously, and, you know, had more people coming up to me. Oh, my God, I love pinball. Anytime, like, they saw me, like, fixing the game or whatever. And I got a bit of a following, and a few other bars called me and helped open up a place called Satellite Lounge. We brought a couple pinball machines there, and people were coming to play pinball, so we kept bringing another and another till we filled the place up with 7 games. Fast forward, and Jack, that guy.
All right, don't. You're getting too far ahead. All right, let's go. We're going to really run out of time quickly if I don't interrupt you. But let's get back to. So Al gets started, and Al is really critical because Al's now suddenly bringing good pinball machines out there in addition to Max, and the two of them are kind of going in different neighborhoods simultaneously. But we all know if you go up and the machine works, you play it again. If it doesn't work, you stop playing it. That's just common sense, right? But the operators prior to Al didn't have that common sense. So now let's move over. We'll go to 2009, and this is returning back to John. In March of 2009, John, who had been playing in the New York City Pinball League, had amassed a collection of pinball machines. He's got 4 in his apartment, and he decides he's going to start have a tournament, Pinferno. Now, Pinferno becomes somewhat of a landmark event in New York in this period of time, because what happens is that he wants a party. He's like, we'll have a tournament, but let's bring food and we'll have drinks and it'll be in my apartment and it'll be great and the machines are well maintained. And 20 people show up, and a lot of these people came from the New York City Pinball League and some of his friends. And it was a huge success. And this led to ultimately, his intent to do more of such events. But he also has amassed about 15 or so pinball machines in his collection very quickly, because he's like Al. He's just that type of personality. He just starts buying pinball machines because he gets quickly hooked.
The Lay's potato chip effect.
Okay, yes, the Lay's potato chip effect. Yeah, all right. So he starts to shop them. He's like, all right, well, I can't fit them in my apartment. I live in New York City. It's a wonder he managed to get 4 in there, to be honest with you. But he goes to the bars in the local neighborhoods. And for one reason or another, a lot of, the New York, the operator situation is a little tough, but he meets with no success. He can't get into the bars. The bars don't want it, or the bars have another operator they can't get rid of, or whatever it is. He can't make it happen. So he switches gears, and he decides to go pitch it to a local skateboard shop. And the owner of the local skateboard shop says, sure, yeah, we'll put it in the window. And immediately, the machine starts making money, and John's really excited. However, about a week later, the owner of the skateboard shop says, hey, listen, by the way, I'm going to have to close soon. Like what? He goes, yeah, we're not doing too well. Unless, of course, you want to, help invest in the shop. And apparently that sales pitch worked, because John invested in the shop. So John ultimately takes over Reciprocal Skateboards in the East Village, and starts putting, immediately puts a couple more machines in there. So once he gets in the door, there's now 3 machines in there, and he's resurrecting the shop. He sees it as a logical, marriage, skateboarding and pinball, a lot of young kids coming in to play there. But what happens with Reciprocal, and I think that what's really, really important with Reciprocal, and there's a shot of the outdoor. This is the East Village of New York City, okay? This is a grungy skateboarding shop. But it also turns into this pinball oasis, because it's this one place where, all the machines are pretty well kept, and they're open all the time. And this is these are shots from some of the subsequent Pinfernos. But, the entire New York City pinball crowd that is sort of existing and growing at this point, they frequent this place. And John holds more Pinfernos, one after the other, for a while, ultimately culminating in his expanding the shop into the neighboring space. That's the other entrance, and he puts all pinball machines in this other space. So it's like half skateboard shop, half pinball arcade. And of course that just becomes that there's an interior of that section there. And and that draws more people, and it opens the door for, he did a Tron launch party for Stern. He ultimately did the last Pinferno, which was Pinferno 7. He was part of the scheduled stop. It was an IFPA-sponsored event, 64 people. It went on forever, but it was a huge success. And, you know, and big people come, you know, like it's not, you know, he's drawing people. There's a shot of Penny over there, and we, you know, hanging out in between matches. There's Steve Bowden helping run the show. Lyman. And in the back there, you can see Lyman Sheets. He's coming in from Chicago to participate in this Pinferno event. So John is basically putting New York City and Pinferno and Reciprocal on this sort of, you know, bigger map. I attended this event. I didn't compete because I have a hard time committing that much time to playing pinball. But I met people from all over the East Coast. People were just coming in all over it, and they love it. And you know, and it's a pretty special accomplishment. Okay, so we're going to talk about me a little bit. I love talking about me. So I hope that we'll do okay with this. All right, a little bit about my background. I'm 46 years old, well, soon to be 46 years old. I grew up in the era of the arcade, and I never played pinball. I never had a lot of money. If I went into a video arcade and I put money in a pinball machine, it was a wasted quarter because I sucked. And so I just steered away. I was attracted to them, but I was bad at it, so I steered away. Fast forward in mid-2000s, I'm living in Los Angeles, and I'm getting back. There's a video arcade emulation resurgence, and my buddy and I were getting into it, and we're building little our custom control panels for our computer and just, you know, geeking out on it like that and reliving the days of our youth in the video arcade. And I come across this place called Miss T's Barcade. And I honestly think it might be the very first ever bar arcade hybrid. And Miss T's Barcade was someone's apartment, and it was a speakeasy. It was in, you know, downtown area of Los Angeles, and you essentially, they opened two nights a week, and you went up into their apartment, and they put a curtain over their bedroom, and it was this big studio space, and they had a bunch of arcade machines and like two or three pinball machines. And it was an oasis, and they stayed up past, you know, the legal hour of most of when Los Angeles has to close. They just stayed open because they were illegal all across the board, so it didn't really matter how late they stayed open. And they sold cheap beer, and they had a DJ, and the place got slammed. You know, it was funny because at 10 o'clock, the place would get slammed, and then it slowed down a little bit, and then when all the other bars in Los Angeles closed, they get slammed again. And they were doing great business, and it was really like really exciting to see. So I introduced my buddy Paul to this place. And Paul comes in, and we're playing Donkey Kong, and we're playing, you know, whatever, Galaga. And he's like, let's go play pinball. I'm like, pinball, really? He was a huge pinball fan as a kid. And he started introducing me to the game, and we start playing. And ultimately, I'm hooked. You know, now the quarters don't mean as much to me as they used to. I've got a job. I get the game a little bit more. It doesn't matter that I suck. I accept that I don't want to suck, so I want to keep playing. I want to start exploring this universe. And I literally start going all over L.A. trying to find pinball as a result. In 2008, I moved back to New York. Now, 2008 is this year, you know, when the New York City Pinball League is going. Al's got locations now. Max has got more locations. John is doing Pinferno, and you know, he's amassing his collection. I'm coming back, and I'm actually discovering pinball on location, and I'm kind of excited about it, but I'm not at all part of the New York City pinball scene at all. I'm taking my buddies that I'm hanging out with, and we go, and I'm introducing into this game of pinball. And every single person I introduced the game of pinball to got hooked. I remember I had this one friend that would come visit me from L.A. all the time, and he didn't drink, and still doesn't, and that's fine, except that in New York City, if you go out, you largely go to bars because that's really what the nightlife is, especially for the uncreative types like myself. And so I didn't know what the hell to do with this guy, except that we went to this one bar that I still call home, and they had a pinball machine there. I said, oh, let's play some pinball. He had never played. And he played, and he did terrible, and he got up, and he walked away. And I'm like, oh, crap, now what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And I look over at him, and he's at the bar, and he's getting more quarters because he needs to play more pinball. And I'm like, oh, yeah, all right, well, let me get a drink, too, and we'll hang out, and we'll play some more pinball. And we're there for a couple hours. And every single time he came back into town after that, which was rather frequent during this era, we're always going out and playing pinball. I'm introducing other people. I introduced this, like, 24-year-old girl from Scotland, pinball. She'd never seen one in her life. She had no idea what it meant to to hit flipper buttons or do anything. And she's, you know, I put 2 credits in the game. I'm expecting to have a nice introduction to it. And she's hovered over like that, and she's knocking the pinball around, like hypnotized. And it drains, and it doesn't matter. She just pulls and launches the next one. And she just keeps going and going and going right through both credits in, like, you know, I don't know, 35 seconds. And then she's completely hooked. And I'm like, okay, let's try that again, only maybe we could take turns. And, you know, we hung out there. We started playing for a little while. And what, and then, you know, then I start dating this woman. I introduce, you know, I don't introduce her. I kind of quietly, and this is, again, these are still sort of dark days for pinball. So I like quietly mention after a few months of dating, like, so you want to go play pinball? You know, and just afraid that, feeling at this point that the relationship was on strong enough grounds that I can be a pinball nerd in front of her. And she's like, oh, I love pinball. I'm like, oh, hell yeah. All right, so now we live together. So we start playing pinball. Anyway, the point is that, like, I see the excitement on all of these people's faces, not the excitement of the established community, because I'm not a part of the established community. I'm an outsider, you know. I'm just some guy, and I bring all these new people in, and I see how lit up they are, and I'm thinking to myself, why aren't more people playing pinball? This is ridiculous. Like, how come, like, this is an amazing game, and people need to start playing pinball. And so I think to myself, all right, I'm doing something about it. And maybe because I was in between projects and I had time on my hands, but I just became obsessed with this thing, and I didn't know what to do. My first idea was I was going to create an online pinball locator. Not, of course, knowing that one already existed in New York City, but nevertheless, that was sort of my vision. So I start doing research, I start talking to buddies and friends of mine. None of them play pinball. They all know the game, they all like the game, but none of them are part of this community. And I stress this because I came in as an outsider, and I think that offered me a certain perspective on things that you know, guided me in what I ultimately did. So what do I start doing? I start imagining I'm going to form an organization, and I'm going to, you know, here's some sketches for logos. I literally would go down to this coffee shop around the corner from my apartment and sit there for a few hours every day and work on this project. You know, the logo, these are some early iterations of the logos that, you know, that ultimately led to, you know, the logo I decided on. You know, but I come from a graphic design background, a web development background, and a marketing background. I worked, you know, many years in advertising as well. And I'm like, all right, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it right, because I don't, you know, I'm not going to half-ass it. This is like a printout from Max's pinball locator. And I would print these things out, and I decided that I was going to do the locator anyway. I was just going to do it better. And then the idea for the league came about. But I was gonna, and I found out about Max's league, but I was gonna do something different. And it wasn't just step on any toes. I just was gonna do something different. So I would print this locator out. I'd make notes and highlight things and everything. Then I would find other sources of information. And I was going around, and literally, you see the Google Maps up there. I print these Google Maps up in various neighborhoods, and I went and I played every single pinball machine in New York City. I went and I called every place, make sure they had it. I went there. I took pictures of the interiors of these places. I tried to get a sense of how good the game was, or how well maintained it was, but the truth is I didn't really know, because I didn't know pinball that well. I remember playing, you know, Sopranos and not knowing that the safe didn't open. I had no idea that that was a feature. But I was happy to play it. It didn't matter. I was playing pinball. And I trolled these neighborhoods, and I took notes. And then, as we got closer, I gathered, you know, some friends and family of mine, and I said, all right, I want to create this team league. I want it to be, you know, I was really obsessed with the idea that it's co-ed. I was really obsessed with the idea that it was a fun night out for everybody, that was going to appeal to the masses, so I'm going to market it in that regard. So I took we went on this like cheesy photo shoot bar crawl, and it's specifically to go and play in various places and take pictures of what I was sort of, how I wanted to brand and market this team league. So these are a little campy, I concede, but this is where everything sort of spawned. And we went out, and that's the Sopranos machine. I had no idea had a safe feature. But we went to these various locations, took these pictures. Ultimately, we end up at this this bar called Mission Dolores in Brooklyn, in the Park Slope area of Brooklyn. And and this is the other thing too, right? So they're married at this point. This is my cousin and his wife at the time. And I wanted to promote this image that going out and playing pinball can get you laid. Like I wanted to challenge the entire image of what pinball was, and so I'm taking pictures like this, and this was meant to be, you know, part of the marketing and the branding. And you know, I can see where some people might think that this is a bit of a stretch, but the truth is, I think that, you know, it, you know, if you present it properly and change the tone, things you're gonna have success. So I launched Pinball New York City. .com or pinballnyc.com, right? So this is the website as it was in its first incarnation. You can see the Park Slope Photoshop picture there. And it was a slideshow of images. And I, you know, I had a how to play pinball section, you know, for the newbies. And I, you know, had gone around and imagined this league. And the league, well, we'll get back to the league in a second. So here's the revamped locator. This is just a list of the machines that were in the city at the time on the webpage. It's, you know, I wanted the graphics. I wanted some basic. I wanted to be visually strong, and I wanted people to you know gravitate to it, whether or not they played pinball. You know, I wasn't building for the pinball audience. I was building for a bigger, newer audience because there are more people out there that don't play pinball than there are that do play pinball. And I wanted those people. So here we go. This is an actual detail of a location page, which will give you a sense of what the location was like. Again, with photos, a handwritten description. It was all curated content. And but that was, you know, at the time, my level of dedication to what I was doing. And then I have a launch party in December 2010. I had spoken to this. There's one of the original posters. I got a bar owner who was really into pinball, played in Max's league. This guy named Mike Wiley, he owned a couple of bars at the time. They both had pinball. And I sat down with him one afternoon before he opened the bar. I said, this is what I want to do. You know, and here's how I want to do it. I want the league to be wholly public pinball spread out around the city. I want to promote pinball on location. I don't want something at a single location. That's to me counterintuitive to the goal of pushing and promoting the game. I don't want to end up in somebody's apartment because that doesn't do anybody any good except the collector that has it in the apartment. I want the machines to flourish on location, and I want to build the audience for pinball. And so the idea was, and this is not a radical idea, it just had never been done before. And it was born out of my time years ago in New York, playing in the New York City Dart League. But every team has a bar, and you call that bar home, and you play half your matches, you play matches one-on-one against another team, and you know, half your matches are at home and half your matches are on the road. So you tour the city. You get to see the rest of the city and see these bars you would never go to and play these games you would never play. You obviously have home field advantage because it's your bar and it's your machines and you know them. But nevertheless, you know, it's also a group effort. You know, there's rules that are based on the idea of just camaraderie and you know, strategy that goes on in there. So I create this launch party. And the truth is that it draws some of the established pinball crowd out, and that's great because they're instrumental in kind of making it happen. And new people and friends, and it's meant to be a party. And I got the logo and you know, put it on T-shirts, temporary iron-on transfers and everything, and we launch. Now, all of this, you know, and I'll just show you a few pictures of, you know, these are early matches and some of the bars, and these are not pinball people. You know, there are some. There are definitely some. But these are people that sort of coming out of the woodworks and embracing something that's an entirely different format and not overwhelmed or concerned with world ranking points or you know, head-to-head competition. It is ultimately a beer-drinking league. And you know, people do take it seriously, don't get me wrong, and there are those out there that don't drink because it affects their game, but you know, that was the way I pitched it. There's a few more photos of some of these early matches, the various bars around the city. Okay. All of this effort culminates in, you know, and I strongly believe this. I got a phone call. We started in January 2011. I got a phone call in February from a writer who wanted to do an article on the league. And I honestly think that it's because of the website and the logo and all the efforts and energy I put into that, because it lent it legitimacy. We didn't have a big league. We'd only been around for, you know, a few weeks. But now suddenly, you know, the New York Times wants to do a section on the league as you know, in the weekend section. Well, you know, you get the New York Times involved, and everybody's on board. So, you know, here's an urbandaddy.com website, some of the smaller places, because suddenly it's legit. The New York Times has legitimized the league. And this is I don't know if we have time for this, so I'm going to pass on that. Nope, sorry, we're going to pass on that. So here's some just general pictures around the league and some of the events and parties we have, and just, you know, various people playing. That's what people look like when they're playing pinball. And I have a great photographer friend of mine that I met taking some amazing pictures, a guy named Philip Wolak, who's responsible for most of these images here that you're seeing. Huge contributor, because I think that, you know, it really does help sex up the game. These machines are beautiful. These photographs are beautiful. The people are beautiful. And, you know, we're playing pinball, you know, and getting together in groups and having parties and stuff. Here we go with, we're quickly running out of time, so I'm going to zoom through some of these. And, okay, so the awards, it's a team league. Not interested in an off-the-shelf trophy. I want to do something special. So I commission a welder, sculptor friend of mine to create a trophy, one of a kind. Here it is. I make these medals out of, it's a beer drinking league, so I buy these cork coasters and I hand cut these stencils and create these medals that you'll see around people's necks. I commission pint glasses to give out to the individuals as well, with our logo on the front and bars on the back. I want to promote the bars. I want to promote the places that have pinball. I want them to get excited about having it. I want them to generate and benefit from it, because if they do, we all do. Here we go. You know, these are some of the winners throughout the league. they do get strangely excited. Various teams. There's Al. He played on a couple of winning teams. And there we go. There's John. John ultimately takes over Jack Barr, and his team wins. And that's, I love that photo. Okay, we grow. We have to commission another trophy because we have a different division now, and that's a look of that. Okay, here, this is the team aspect, team photos. The teams put together these team photos, and you know, there's this sort of sense of just like camaraderie that goes on, and I, you know, this is sort of what why I'm showing it to you. These are fun. This is more of a series of photos. And it's just basically everyone's butt and their high school initials, which I think is kind of cool. So they did the whole team there. This is my team, where we did back glasses, and, you know, whatever, which is fun as well. And, okay, events. Every season, in between, at the beginning, at the middle, and the end of each season, we've got parties. They are parties first. Okay, it is meant to be festive. It's meant to be fun. We have Now in the spring, every spring in the middle of the season, we have a mixed doubles tournament. I want the women out there. I want them to play, and they come. You know, I market for them. You know, we've got split flipper tournaments in the mixed double. And they're having a great time, and you know they're from all over, and they're winning. And then you know other things like I've had live music show up. You know, happen. Why not have live music at a pinball party? You know, play pinball, listen to live music. So there's a little bit of that going on. Turns into a dance party, Halloween party. You know, dress as your favorite pinball character. Okay, so we got some people dressing as various people, and if we had time, we would try to guess who they are. Okay, so when we started, we had 5 teams, 5 locations, roughly 25 players. Currently, we have 34 teams at 23 locations and roughly 300 players. I actually turned away 3 teams this season because they registered late. So it continues to grow. People still want to play. Roughly 22% of the league is female. They come out. They're excited to play the game. Roughly 22% of this crowd is not. You know, I think that they're out there. These women want to play. They come from all walks of life, you know, from lawyers to students to, you know, bartenders. You know, they're from, you know, 60-year-olds down to 22-year-olds. They're coming from all over. All right, I'm going to quickly go through because I realize I'm running out of time here. Peter is a mag collector. He is a big part of it, but he kind of jumps in late in the scene. He sees that things are bubbling over. He's a collector from back in the day, and bought a lot of old, secondhand A-list titles and has an enormous collection that nobody really knows about. Opens Sunshine Laundry 23 years ago, but then suddenly he just starts to cram this laundromat up in Greenpoint, Brooklyn with as many pinball machines as he could possibly can. You see the Attack from Mars back behind the machines, you know, around the corner. You know, he's got a big bag bar that's, and then a Terminator 2 if you're willing to climb up on the top of the washer there. You've got more pinball machines there. And then, of course, modern pinball. Steve Epstein, Steve Zoller, they create, you know, starting 2 years ago, they open up Modern Pinball NYC, which is a really fantastic endeavor. And what Modern Pinball does that my league doesn't, what nobody else does, is that it appeals to all age groups. And, you know, if Steve were here, he would tell you that, you know, appealing to the youth is a really big part of his mission. And that's huge. You know, you need these efforts. You need these sort of very concerted efforts to have people that are going to, you know, let be the gateway drug, right? Get these 10-year-olds in to play the game because they're the ones that are going to be buying the machines in the future. And Modern does a great job of that. They get lots of recognition. This is for the Today Show. They start filming an interview for the Today Show. There I am, and if you watch the Today Show clip, I think you can see the back of my head for like a split second. But I was filmed. And then there's some more people there playing, obviously, and then the kids. I'm going to wrap by because I realize I'm out of time. I think that there's a lot to be learned in what's going on in New York because I think that there's a lot of there's lots of room for improvement in the way we market, and I think New York City, I think pinball in general has a bit of an image problem, and I think that there are a lot of people out there that want to play the game that just simply haven't been exposed to it, and the success of the league has. And if you have people like Al and Max and people that maintain the machine, the audience is there. Bring them out, make them play the game. Once they play, they'll continue to play the game. That's not. I think we all know that, and we all feed each other. Every person in the New York City scene right now feeds every other's lesson. This is the new website, which was just launched recently. It's got an integrated locator with the people in Portland with the pinball map. I also helped launch Pinball Chicago, so it's a team league here in Chicago, and more recently in Portland, which is Pinball PDX. Anyway, that's my time. Sorry I ran over, Rob. I hope you'll forgive me.
Very nice. Thank you.